Welcome to Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains. I'm Corby Skinner.
And I'm Anna Page. And we're sharing stories of creative people who live and work in the Intermountain West.
At the Babcock Theater, the show starts on the sidewalk.
The marquee is once again lit up on the historic 110-year-old building, which is on the National Register of Historic Places.
It has undergone many transformations, and the theater is now reopened as a movie house, showing films 7 days a week.
Kim Olson, one of the four partners who bought the building in 2008, was instrumental in saving the historic structure. The theater portion of the building is now owned by the city and managed by Matt Blakesley and Arthouse Cinema.
Kim and Matt join us in the studio as we reflect on this important part of Billings history and its bright future. So the two of you are very important parts of what we know as the Babcock Theater downtown, and we're going to go on a little history parade and talk about the origins of the building, where it is now, what we see for the future. And I know, as many people may not know, that the Babcock we see on 2nd Avenue North is not the original Babcock. Kim, can you tell us a little bit about the history of the building, the Babcock, and what it was and what it is now?
Like most railroad towns, the original development happened along the railroad, and that's where Mr. Babcock built his first opera house. But in 1906, much of that area burned, and at that time, the founding fathers were very interested in expanding the community, and so they were pushing for development to go up 28th Street, and that's where the new opera house was going to be built.
It's interesting to see the development move up what we now know as North Broadway. At the time, it was North 28th, but they changed the name, I hear, because of all the theaters, perhaps, or that the woman who named it after a street she loved in New York City.
I've heard that story, yes.
So, Kim, the plan that Mr. Babcock had for that new building on what we now know as Broadway, he didn't build quite as big of a opera house as he wanted. Is that true?
Well, he built what he wanted. At that time, all he was doing, his burned down, and he was just replacing what had burned down. But again, the forefathers said, hey, you know, this is a pretty special place. We call it the Magic City. It's doubling in population every year. We should be bigger. And so they pushed, at first, for a four-story building, then a five-story building, then a seven-story building, and that was the big plan.
Garden on the top. Oh. It would have been just wonderfully elaborate.
Yes, by a fabulous architect out of Seattle. But that isn't quite what got constructed in the end. The theater was built as planned, but the rest of it just never were built.
Well, so much was changing at the time in Billings. You mentioned how the population was doubling on itself between 1900 and 1910. We were poised to be the Chicago of the West, and there was a lot of prophecies that Billings would continue to grow, but we kind of end up in the Depression era or pre-Depression, kind of slowing down a little bit.
I tried to figure out what it was that would have caused that, because there were some developers. I mean, there were some partners in this that were helping out. One died. Another one was heavily invested in copper, which was crashing at that time. So it could have been that just too much risk, too questionable for that particular part. Other things were happening. Expansion with banking systems and the waterways and the sugar beets and agriculture and the trains and everything else. Billings was growing. Billings was doing really, really well. But again, more theaters were coming up. You know, it just maybe the opera building wasn't meant to be.
So, Kim, originally it was a vaudeville house or was it a film?
No. The opera house burned, and they rebuilt an opera house. And it was an opera house. It was in gently decorative plaster with two balconies, horseshoe-shaped box seats. It had all the social segregation between those that are and those that are not.
But it wasn't designed for film.
Film didn't exist at the time.
Yeah, I was just thinking, Matt, this is where you come in. The Babcock is now a film house. I think, when did film start showing up in Billings?
film actually started probably the turn of the century. It would be these little peep show Nickelodeons. You know, you go in and you put your face in front of these little screens and you turn the dial and you put in nickels and you got to see the workers leaving the factories or the flags waving. And that was film. You know, that started. And then that wasn't good enough. Let's make it a little bigger. So they got to where you could group that film and you could put it at the back of a retail store, a grocery store or something, hang a sheet on the wall, put in some chairs, and now you could charge more. And every day, I mean, people got addicted to going to these things. And it grew and grew, and it slowly started to be introduced into the theatrical. You talk about vaudeville. Vaudeville did happen. It was starting when World War I, it was getting more difficult to travel across the country. So those big acts, it was difficult to bring them in. And so you started to supplement with local talent. And it became shorter and shorter little stints. And so the vaudeville thing. And in between some of those, you would see then little bits of film. You know, it just started little bits of film. And those were all silent movies, okay? Instead of the orchestra, you started to get the big organs that could make just about any sound possible, horses and babies crying and stuff like that. And it was all supplemented there.
Oh, yeah, during the silent film eras.
Oh, yes, yes. And see, and then sound was attached to film. And at that time, that is when the Babcock remodeled for the first time. They had improved it in the 1920s. Maybe they brought in better screens and things for the film. But it wasn't until they had to adapt to sound that they took out that second balcony, they simplified things, they took out the horseshoe shape because those were lousy seats.
Yeah, you didn't need that to watch a movie.
Yeah, it was the worst seats instead of the best seats in the house.
And film is growing in popularity, certainly.
Oh yeah, in addiction.
Well, and
yeah.
You can watch how Billings evolved, it seems, from how film evolved, from this experience that the movie really started on the street. So you see the development of this marquee and this great historical ticket booth that has been preserved and now is being used again. But I think it's interesting to see the decline of popularity in the Babcock is also when people are starting to move out to the suburbs, when you're getting more vehicles, and then you have drive-in movie competition, and people not wanting to come down to the theater for that sort of more elaborate experience. You know, going to a film used to be going to this beautiful, very ornate theater, and then you get, I suppose, maybe the more simplified versions of film. And in some ways, you see Billings downtown starting to die, too.
So, Matt, I'm supposed to ask you, I'm working on the renovation of the Alberta Bear Theater, and we have two reel-to-reel film projectors. You need those for anything?
I've actually been talking with them, and I'm going to go check them out. So the answer is maybe at this point.
So now we have the Babcock, and it's going to be, and has been for a little while, a film house, all of like 2 weeks, right?
Yep. We're 2 weeks into being open 7 days a week, showcasing films there, and it's been great.
Well, in the Alberta Bear, originally the Fox came in the 30s, if I'm not mistaken, as a movie house and became direct competition for the Babcock running films. And so we had two major movie houses downtown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it speaks to everything that you were saying that, you know, in most communities across America, you saw a push to the suburbs and a push to the multiplex, particularly now. You know, nobody's going to open a single screen cinema anymore. Everybody's going to try to build anywhere between 10 to 30 screens, depending upon the community size, just because that's how you make your money on that point. So for us at the Babcock, as much as culturally this isn't something that's done much, for us there's a preservation of what the Babcock is. There's an opportunity for us uniquely with film to light that marquee 7 nights a week. That film gives that opportunity where most other art venue kinds of spaces would struggle with that. You can go to a movie and see 10 people, and that's okay. You know, it's not the end of the world compared to a play, and there's more people on the stage than in the audience. That can be a rough thing. So for us, we felt this opportunity to not only restore the Babcock to what it used to be, but to do something unique in downtown to hopefully draw people back to see all the beautiful things that are happening there.
And Kim, you were active in getting the theater placed on the National Historic Register, is that correct?
The whole building.
The entire building.
Yes.
And has that been helpful in saving the building?
Definitely. First of all, just having a building recognized that it's a significant place, recognized nationally, that's important. And then secondly, for us as developers, and the developers are my husband, Don, and our partners, Mike Matthew and Kay Foster. And for that, we utilized historic tax credits, which to help us with offset some of the costs on that. So, yes.
And now the building is really thriving. At some point before the preservation effort started in 08, I believe is when you guys took on the building. It was a ghost town on North Broadway. And it's nice to see that thriving real estate come in and really accentuate this theater, which in some ways was forgotten until recently. I mean, you had most recent memory, I think in the 90s, there was a group that tried to do some film work there. And then for a brief stint, there was boxing, but the theater sat unused. And then as you guys came on, there was live music there sort of sporadically. But this beautiful historic structure was threatened at many points in its life to be torn down. It wasn't maybe even savable, some said.
It was in pretty poor shape. You know, when we acquired the building, we had been talking with the owner periodically over several years, and we would get really close, and then she'd change her mind.
And this was Ruth Moss, who was only the second family to own the building. Her family bought it from the Babcocks, is that correct?
Okay. Built by Albert Babcock. He died. His son, Louis, took it over, who then sold it to Jaime Lipsker, whose family had it from the 1920s till we bought it in 2008, which was, we were pretty proud to be the third owner.
How would you describe, you're an architect, Kim, how would you describe the interior of the building? Is that a particular style of architecture?
Not necessarily architecture, but definitely a style of theaters. Okay, George Scarraz was head of Fox Theater, and it's his look. It's his over-the-top, oversized, bigger-than-life, that sort of approach to things. And that it's one of the few remaining examples of a Scarraz-style theater.
And Matt, coming into this style of theater, what do you feel, or what does your staff feel about being able to operate this? I guess it was from the 1950s that style was applied and remains to this day. These ornate plasters, the beautiful overarching proscenium, and just this sort of historic character. What do you guys feel taking that on?
There's definitely a level of excitement behind it. As someone that was born and raised in Billings, the thought that I have keys to the Babcock Theater in my pocket is ridiculous. I just want to be really honest. Like,
and don't hand them out because you are a pretty cool guy.
It's just crazy because of what that theater has always been to the city of Billings. Even when in its dark days, you know, you'd always walk. Everybody knew about the Babcock. You'd walk by, and especially when we were renovating, the amount of people that would walk by, and there's an air of mystery around it. What's inside there? I remember seeing films there as a kid, and having these moments of like, this was here the whole time. Like, how did I not know about this kind of beautiful space? So there's definitely an energy and excitement about it, but at the same time, there's a level of weight and responsibility that. More than, I don't want to say more than anything we've done as art house, but definitely in the top tier levels of what we've done as art house, we know that this space matters, and we know that what happens in this space matters, and it matters more than just to art house in the name of art house. It matters to the Babcock building. It matters to the city of Billings what happens with this space. So I remember walking in there for the first time. I think I told you this and a few weeks ago, but walking in there for the first time, having keys, and it was dark, and I walked in by myself. It's the first time I walked in, and it was hours, quote unquote. And there was this excitement and this level of, oh no.
What have I done?
What did I do? The beauty of the story of Art House being there so far has been the very next day after that Friday when I walked in to see, 20 plus volunteers show up and bring their hands and effort and energy to care for that space with us. So as much as it's a giant weight on our shoulders, we don't feel like we're alone. And we feel like not only does Billings care about it, but they're invested in this space with us. And that's what's been most energizing about all of this.
Yeah, and you know, you're kind of picking up the torch and moving it forward, the work that Kim and her partners mm-hmm. under the Babcock LLC had done to really get the structure, the plumbing, the roof. I mean, yep. you talk about this infrastructure that you can't see. I know a lot of that has gone on. What are you planning on for the future? Or what kinds of renovations have you done or are planning on since you took over?
Yeah, so, you know, Kim and Don and their partners definitely put years of effort into making that space habitable, you know, in a lot of ways that we could move in there and do anything in there is because of that work. What we've been able to do in the last few months is to do what we're calling lipstick and rouge, to try and bring as much new life to this space as we can for the amount of funds that we currently have available to us. And so we definitely worked really hard over the last few months to get it going. We're very proud of how it looks and how it feels in there, and excited for the more and more of the community to see it. From a long-term perspective, you know, we're in this thing for the long haul. We signed a lease that tries to represent that. And so over the long haul, we're hoping to continue to invest more and more funds into it to bring it back to be the pearl of downtown Billings that we all believe it could and should be. So while we've been able to put a coat of paint here or there, replace carpet here or there, there's still some infrastructure stuff that we need to address. There's some larger decorative pieces like some broken plaster up on the ceiling level that we know that it has to get fixed. It just has to. There's old neon runs that we know, man, we want to get those back where they were. So it's this balancing act of we want modern technology, like a 4K digital projector with the highest level of sound experience for the customer, period. And at the same time, leaning into the historical preservation that you're walking into a movie palace. That
yeah.
They don't make those anymore. And we consider it a really important thing to preserve that.
I love that lipstick and rouge phase, and you might add the perfume or the bath, because when we were there for opening weekend, I mean, some of the comments my friends had made, and we've been to some rowdy concerts there, were, wow, it really just smells so much better in here.
Yes.
So historically, I bet everybody in Billings remembers the last movie they saw at the Babcock, and it's a giveaway if I were to say, as a young boy, I saw The Sound of Music with my aunt setting up in the loge, but I so much remember that. So, Matt and Kim, what were the movies you saw at the Babcock?
Well, actually, my first job was at the Babcock. And my job was with the flashlight. Get your feet off the seat. So,
which
Jaws.
She's still doing today. We can't get her to stop. Kim, you need to leave, okay? We're not paying you.
Oh, I love that. How full circle to have worked
That's
there.
Beautiful.
And then have come back to save it.
Yeah.
No. For me, I actually remember as a kid watching The Sound of Music there. It was like a Saturday kind of kids matinee thing they were doing in the early 90s. And I remember that. And that was the moment of like, this place exists. How is this a thing? And I didn't know about it. So
I didn't grow up around here. I've only been here for about 10 years. And so I missed the movie phase of the Babcock. But getting to go for opening weekend, I think my favorite moment was watching The Princess Bride there, mm-hmm. and to see the whole audience participating in some of those really famous lines, you know, my name is Inigo Montoya, you killed my father, prepare to die, and everyone's speaking it out loud, and there's children in their pajamas, and it was just so much fun, and I feel like that's the heart of the Babcock. That's mm-hmm. that's what's beating in that theater. And that's a beautiful thing to accomplish.
Yeah. For us, you know, we look at film as a relational experience. It doesn't have to be, obviously, in the day of an age of Netflix and YouTube, but the opportunity to create a space like you experienced with Princess Bride. It happened when we played Three Amigos that opening weekend. There were things that I've never laughed at in my entire life, but I was in a room full of kids and adults and families that were laughing at some of the most ridiculous things in that movie. If you've ever seen it, you know there's just some really silly things. And I was actually laughing along with it. And I've seen this movie multiple times, but it's that communal experience of going to the movies together that is the magic of cinema in a lot of ways, and what we're trying to preserve and push forward as art house.
I will admit that I thought I was going to The Princess Bride because I hadn't seen it, and it was Top Gun.
Which was also so much fun, by the way.
It was a lot of fun. And I can't believe I got a little teary-eyed in Top Gun. You know, the guy, his partner dies in a plane crash, and
That's what the big screen does too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I really have to relate my Top Gun story too. I feel like such a nerd, you guys, because all of these things are coming full circle, and I'm paying to see the movie, and I'm standing there with Corey, and we're getting ready to go in, and I all of a sudden realize there's a Billings tie to this movie, and Iceman is based on the actual call name of a musician who lived in Billings very briefly. He was in a band called Radio Birdman, and his name is Dennis Tech, and he lived in Billings in the 90s, raised his family here, and he ran Lifelight for St. Vincent, the hospital. He was a fighter pilot, a really incredible sort of renaissance man of so many talents, and he's an ER doc, but he also happens to be one of the top 10 rock gods of Australia of all time, up there with Angus Young.
Yeah,
he
of course,
toured
yeah,
with the Stooges,
oh, yeah.
And they were about to go on a tour in the United States with the Ramones, and their label dropped them, and I think they probably would have been as famous as the Ramones, but that's where Iceman comes from.
Wow.
So
that is a lot of history, Anna. Yeah. Good for you.
The walking Wikipedia.
I just like tying things together. Yeah.
Will the Babcock be available for other events? I'm hoping that boxing doesn't come back. I actually sold tickets to boxing when boxing was at the Babcock, and it sold out all the time.
I know.
It was crazy.
When we first picked up the theater, we thought, oh, well, we can't have this stuff in here. This is just not correct for it. But it was the only thing that was paying us any money. You know,
it was really fun.
And wasn't it also the thing that burned it down in the 20s? Wasn't
in
there
the 30s,
a boxing
in
match?
The 30s, yeah, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
To answer your question, Corby, we do see the Babcock from a long-term vision standpoint as a community event space that we hope to see more and more, whether it's concerts or plays or dance recitals, whatever it is there. But what we know as Art House right now is to book films right now, the way that we're booking films, we have to have a place to put that film. Art House is currently doing its Phase 2 fundraiser. And when Phase 2 is open for Art House, where we expand to 3 screens and bring the same level of technology that's at the Babcock now to Art House, it'll allow us to move that booking of a film over to Art House so we can make it available for the community. The opportunity that the Babcock presents us and Phase 2 of Art House, that you have the Alberta Bear, which is, you know, 1600. I'm not sure what the renovations are going to look like. But then you have the Babcock at about 750. But then you can half the Babcock and not do the balcony and you have 450. Or you could move it over to Art House and have about 200. Or you could do one of the smaller theaters and have 100. So it provides this opportunity for downtown Billings to host more and more great content, but to find the best space for that content.
Well, and there's some events that I've been to at Art House that would really benefit from larger space. Mm-hmm. When you have like someone like Richard Ford or Emily Danforth in town to talk about their latest books turned to movies, I mean, what a cool experience. But those are packed nights.
And have to turn people away.
Yeah.
So. And I thought too, Kim, it was interesting to bring it back to the stage when you took over the building. The stage was, there was a cement wall down the middle of it. At some point, the stage was totally unnecessary to the Babcock.
When it became film, yeah. The stage no longer was required. It was no longer live productions. And so they cut the back half off and gave it to the retail space. One of the items on our development agreement was to restore the stage.
And so the stage is back to its full glory, and that new screen, Matt, that you guys put in is able to be lifted up, and eventually that stage will be utilized
for
other...
We could lift ours.
you could lift yours.
Yeah, it was
sandbags. No one's saying you couldn't.
Yeah.
So we've got it on motorized truss right now, which is really nice. And that is a long-term investment in the opportunity to use that stage more and more, that it's not a hard thing to lift that screen. The Babcock is unique that it does have a full fly space that you can put a screen up there. And then, you know, part of that long-term vision is to get more and more rigging there with that fly space to be able to have not just appropriate side curtains, but, you know, lighting or scenery, those kinds of things. All of that is very expensive. You know, even a curtain, front curtain that opens and closes before the films, that's in the vision. We're going to do that, but that's a giant investment that we know is going to take some time, and we're going to work on it.
Well, and the industry changes. I've been working on the fundraising for the Alberta Bear Theater, and the really big Broadway shows that people want to see aren't going to fit into the riggings that were there not only 30 years ago. The original riggings in the Alberta Bear Theater were there when we renovated the first time.
Yeah.
So as our entertainment options change and things become more sophisticated, we have to renovate. If we want to see what's available, I mean, talk about the difference between film, reel to reel, and what you have now in terms of projection.
So we've got this beautiful opportunity to move into what has always been the projection booth there and to project from there. But it's really fascinating. You go into the theater and you see all of these different viewing windows and places where the, you know, projection lens would be found. And we're not using really many of those. We've just got one port that we're using for our 4K digital projector. So as much as we can, we're trying to lean into what does this building want to be? And part of that is, as Kim mentioned, when it was remodeled to be a movie house. And so we're trying to lean into that. The difference between reel to reel versus digital is great for us on a couple levels. One is the viewing experience can be much clearer and sharper and brighter on a lot of levels. But secondly, it provides us opportunity to book more of the kinds of films that we want to book. In the old reel-to-reel days, the production companies would only produce so many of those reels. There were only so many prints out in the world. So it could be a struggle to try and get those prints at different times. And so the digital age has provided opportunity for theaters like ours to have opportunity to book those films because all the prints aren't already called for, you know, by the bigger companies that little guys like us can raise our hand and say, hey, we'd like a copy of Creed 2. Can we get that? And they're much more willing to work with us on that. So we're excited about that.
And how has the first few weeks been received? Are you seeing the community showing up?
Yeah. So opening weekend, as you guys talked about, was just such a beautiful testament to what that theater is and the community of Billings and how supportive they are of that space. Just loved every minute of that. Since then, we've opened Creed 2, and that's been open for 2 weeks, and it's been going good. Honestly, we have some work to do, just from a community awareness standpoint, that there is an art house experience of going to the movies at the Babcock, and then there is the traditional big box, you know, going to a film, and they're kind of different experiences. And so we wanted to try and show and say, hey, come check out art house because at the Babcock, because there's something really unique and beautiful here that's different. And we think you'll really enjoy it. And I would just say the majority of the public has yet to experience that and to know, hey, if I could go see Creed 2, I could go out to the West End, or I could go to the Babcock, let's do that.
Kim, you have been involved in a lot of downtown redevelopment. I know you've been on various boards helping to preserve downtown, renovate downtown. How do you see the Babcock fitting into a bigger cultural community?
Oh, I just think this is awesome. We are just so happy that the Babcock is lit up at night. I mean, that it just claims the whole downtown to have that light flashing. It's really, really important. That piece, that element alone is really, really important to the overall of downtown and its place.
I couldn't agree more. I really appreciate both of you coming in, taking the time to talk about what you've seen and what you're experiencing in the future of the Babcock. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's time to go see a movie.
I agree.
See you at the Babcock.
See you at the Babcock.
Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains is produced by Corby Skinner, Anna Page, and Ken Siebert for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music by Alex Naumann. Additional funding provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. More information on Resounds is available at ypradio.org.